Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Joshua Schachter. Joshua is the founder of Delicious and the inventor of tagging, which became hashtags. Joshua has founded two startups, invests in startups, runs an event for autonomous racing called Self-Racing Cars, and is an amateur race car driver. Hey, Joshua, it's great to have you back. This is the second or maybe third time we've had you on the show, but always a pleasure to talk to you.
How are you doing?
We're really excited to have you back because you always have some great tools. And these days, I know you're paying special attention to new stuff. So we're really eager to hear what you have for us.
You've got a few tools for us. And tell us, the first one is intriguing, scalpels.
Yeah, so I grew up in a household where both of my parents went to art school, and they had not gotten in the habit of using, you know, scissors to cut paper and things. If you wanted to cleanly cut paper, you put it down on something, on a piece of glass or something, and you use a razor blade to cut it. So I grew up using razor blades instead of scissors, which is not, you know, I guess the safest thing. but it's a habit I got into, and I always noticed that you know, not great scissors leave terrible edges. I have been using razor blades for a long time, but they are awkward to hold and difficult and hard to precisely get into places. So I discovered not too long ago disposable scalpels, and you know, it's like, you know, $15. They last for quite a long time. I'm not very tough on them. There's various shapes. They're super useful for cleaning up 3D prints and cutting things precisely. They are wickedly sharp. I when they finally do go, and they can crack because they're not that tough, I put a piece of tape over them so no one gets cut when they go into the garbage. And I recently actually built a paper cutter. I built basically a CNC machine to do very large drawings. And I had gotten a roll of 48-inch wide watercolor paper. I think it's 42-inch wide watercolor paper. And then I realized that a guillotine paper cutter was going to be like $1,500 for an okay one. So I bought a piece of linear guide, which is a steel rail designed to have a ball bearing pack slide on it, and 3D printed a scalpel holder. So now I have a thing that will cut, use a scalpel and cut a perfectly straight line in a piece of paper. You know, it can go 60 inches, but I only need the 42 inches. Huh.
So in your, using a disposable scalpels, I think there's is there a brand or a type that you recommend over others? I imagine there would be some that would be kind of like an X-Acto knife where you're just replacing the blades and the handle stays the same. There's others where probably you dispose the whole thing, blade and handle. Do you have any recommendations on that?
I use the ones that are whatever the cheapest thing on Amazon is. I use, I think, number 11s. And there's another one. One has got a sharp blade that looks a lot like an X-Acto knife. One's got a rounded blade, so it cuts everywhere at a variety of angles.
Which one do you prefer?
I like the sharp one, but I am I actually read some medical catalogs, and I think people generally like the rounded one. But there are many types, hooks and all kinds of things that seem super useful. And I haven't gotten into it, but I plan to. But I find myself reaching for, like, I've gone through many packages of the straight bladed ones. I use ones where it's got an integrated handle, because I know that I would probably just lose the handle at some point. But there are probably nicer ones than the ones I use.
Okay, so they appear to be, you know, I don't know, they probably run around $7 or $8 for 10 of them.
Yeah,
think of them as a buck a piece. Number 11s, plastic handles. That's the straight edge. And I guess the difference between a scalpel and like an X-Acto is the angle of the blade. So X-Acto is a little bit closer to, I don't know, perpendicular, say, and there's a higher rake on a scalpel edge.
It's also thinner. It's a much finer blade. Yes, I use number 11s mostly, and then it looks like I ordered some number 22s once.
Okay. And it's like you can get, if you're just interested in the blades, you can get them like 100 blades for $15.
Yes. I have not tried that yet, though. I get the sense that the individual ones are higher quality, but the ones that I've been using have been perfectly adequate.
And it's strong. You mentioned the blade's thinner, so is this strong enough for cutting like spurs on a piece of plastic or,
Yeah. If they're not that fine, if you put a lot of sideways force, they can snap. You have to remember that in steel, there is a trade-off between brittleness and sharpness, or sharp ability.
Sure, the brittleness of it.
And these scalpels, I'm just trying to figure out the numbering system. Is it sort of where the higher the number, the smaller, finer?
No,
Because they have, like, is a number 22 bigger or smaller than a number 11?
It is actually slightly bigger. If you Google for scalpel shapes, there are guides. For example, a 22 is rounded, a number 12 is hooked, a 12D has blades on two sides. So there's
Oh,
all kinds of
like a
different
lightsaber.
things.
Okay.
Yeah. It's got a hook with a blade on the outside and the inside. There's little tiny ones, there's gigantic ones, there's all sorts of different types. I feel like the next one I'm going to try is the one with a hook, so I can sort of grab something and pull back, but I haven't really needed it.
Okay. Well, that's a cool tool. I never thought about it, but
Yeah.
it may be better than an X-Acto for certain jobs. Certainly, the thing about people don't realize about paper, if you cut a lot of paper or foam core, is that it really does dull blades very, very quickly. And you really have to have them really sharp to do a clean cut on things like foam core.
Yeah, well, if you talk to anyone who does a lot of like making stuff in the shop, they will have a war story about cutting foam. So I like when I actually use the scalpels to cut foam a lot because you can just sort of gently, it is so sharp you could just gently run it over several times. And it just cuts a little bit more each time. Like it really does go through stuff very easily. It feels to me like they are sharper than X-Acto knives.
Actually, something I learned recently is if you have a blade on your saw, you can use your table saw to cut foam core.
Interesting. I do not have a table saw at
Oh,
all.
okay.
I get by without. I suppose I have a friend that has one. He has a saw stop at his shop. I have a lot of trouble mitigating sawdust because my cars live with the stuff, and so I tend to do in paper and 3D printing, and then I go directly to metal. I don't do very much wood, so I
Well,
never got into
if
that.
you do have a table saw, you can cut foam core on it, which is really nice if you're cutting a lot to the similar width or whatever. You
Yes.
can send it through really fast. So, great scalpels, disposable scalpels for cutting materials. What's another cool tool, Josh?
Okay, so tell us about threaded inserts.
So I've been using them a ton, a lot lately. A threaded insert is basically a plug with a screw hole in the middle of it.
A plug with a screw hole in the middle of it. Okay, something you put in a hole, and inside that is something you can screw into.
Correct. So I use, and there are many kinds. I use M5. I try to standardize on M5. Bolts and things for my projects. So I have they're about I think 9 millimeters long. 6.5 millimeters is the hole that they fit into.
And
It's got
M5 is metric. It's a metric bolt.
metric M5 bolt. Yes, a metric 5 millimeter
Okay.
bolt.
All right. So, and the 5 millimeters is the what is 5 millimeters?
It's the diameter of the bolt.
Okay.
It's the nominal diameter. A real M5 bolt is slightly less than that.
Okay.
Anyway, so it's a cylinder about 6.5 millimeters in diameter, about 10 millimeters long. It's got I use brass ones. They've got a knurled outside and a threaded inside, right? Thus a threaded insert. So what I do is when I 3D print something, I leave a 6.5 millimeter hole where I want the bolt hole to be. And then when it's time to put together, I put the threaded insert on the tip of a soldering iron, and I just push it into the hole, and it lines up and pops in, and now I have a brass threaded slot in my 3D print.
That's right, because so it's like a heat press fit. You kind of
that is exactly it. However, there are ones that have external threads so that you can screw them in. Mm-hmm. And in fact, on a CNC table that I made, or CNC router table, I drilled holes and then I screwed in brass threaded inserts. And it was nice because they were brass on that machine because the brass is safe for a carbide bit to touch.
So I'm a little confused about screwing in an insert. If you're screwing in the insert, why don't you just screw in the thing?
So this is not the 3D printed one. The 3D printed one is knurled. It's got just a pattern to grip the melted plastic. You obviously can't do a thermal set in a wood, right? So the outer side is threaded, and then it's got a smaller size on the inside that is threaded. And it lets you bolt and unbolt things to the table. So I did a grid of, I believe it was 10 by 10 or maybe more than that. I put like 100 threaded inserts into this piece of plywood, and then I could bolt down anything I wanted and then unbolt it, rebolt it, right? Because the brass is going to survive the threading and unthreading for a long time.
Okay. There seems to be a whole bunch of different kinds of threaded inserts. There's
press fit, thermal fit.
Right.
There's dozens and dozens of kinds.
Different kinds of threads on the outside. What's your experience? You mentioned thermal fit, which would be probably good into plastic. If you're going into plywood, you would use one of these.
The threaded outside ones that's designed for wood.
And they have different types as well
yeah.
on the outside.
So with plastic, you can, like, say I wanted to screw one piece into a 3D printed thing, right? I wanted the bolt to sink into that. I could 3D print a 4.5 millimeter hole and then use a tap and tap a hole as if it was metal or something. And that will work, but it's not particularly strong. You can't bolt it and unbolt it and rebolt it and try it again and do that. So it makes for tougher, stronger things that can be reused, reorganized, realigned. So for example, on the thing that I mentioned before, the linear guide, the cutter, it's got a rotating bearing so that the scalpel can rotate, but the scalpel mount itself, is actually bolted to with these threaded inserts. And I believe I used 12 threaded inserts in this whole design. So everything could be open, taken apart, moved, replaced, fixed, because, you know, I rarely get the design right the first time. So, mm-hmm. you know, 5 or 6 right. times you screw something and unscrew it in into a raw plastic hole, it comes apart, it breaks.
Right. Yeah. So, in some senses, this is what IKEA does with their flat furniture. They're inserts.
Yes.
Those
are usually not, they are threaded, right? That, you know, you'll put it's like a cylindrical thing with the hole in the opposite side. And then it sinks into a larger hole and then you screw into it laterally, right? This is that same kind of idea.
Mm-hmm. Right. So if you're making rearrangeable furniture or portable disassembled furniture, you can also use this. So the brass ones will obviously last a little longer and be nicer, but they make cheap versions for plywood, etc. So this is just a general tool. There's not a specific brand or kind that you're going to suggest.
The good stuff is they're called PEMs, P-E-M. So, and P-E-M. Sometimes people refer to them as PEM.
Is that a brand or
a type? I believe that's a brand, yeah.
Okay.
I get these from McMaster, so I'm assuming they're pretty good. So they obscure the underlying brand on lots of their stuff.
Right. The PEM ones have a kind of a diamond knurl on the outside.
Yeah, that's the thermoset
right
pattern. I believe they have many kinds though.
Okay.
I believe they're a company that makes lots and lots of types of this stuff.
Alrighty. Okay, well, good. PEM press in thermoset.
Threaded inserts.
Threaded inserts. Check them out. What's another one on your list? The next one here is the slim scrapbooking project cases. That's intriguing. Tell us about that.
So this is an organizational thing that I use. Basically, if I'm working on a circuit board, like an Arduino with a sensor and the whatever, like there's 8 parts and 3 tools and whatever, I found these boxes. They're like a foot wide, a foot deep, and like 2 or 3 inches tall. So they're not huge. And I put all the stuff in the project case together. And what happens is when I have to swap to another project, I get blocked on this project, I'm waiting for a part, I can just close the thing up, put it on the shelf. Many of my projects are small enough to fit in that. I do have larger bins for bigger projects, but I have dozens of these. I like, for example, one that's sitting out on my desk right now is I'm building a sensor mesh for my house, ESP 8266s and temperature probes. So all of them fit in the box. There's the wall warts that go with them, that the apparently fake Dallas Semiconductor temperature sensors. And it all fits in there and it lets me keep everything together. And I will frequently just put, like, if it's, especially if I'm using a special tool or something, I'll just put the tools in the box with it directly. So that means that when I want to pick up a project, everything is already organized and put together in one spot. So I don't spend a lot of time, gathering the pieces to work on something, working on it, and then scattering the pieces when I have to stop working on it.
That's such a great idea. I love that. Do you have your description on the document's kind of generic? Do you have a particular source where you get these?
I got like 2 dozen of them at Michael's, and I have no idea what the brand is.
Okay.
But it's just a generic, polyethylene storage box. The only downside that you have to be careful of is static if you're dealing with electronic stuff. Mm-hmm. But I have one that has, like, I do. Every year I send out Christmas cards and I make Christmas cards. Like I will, usually I CNC route or laser cut the card and then I stamp it. So all the ink, the paper, the stationery, the rolling tools are in one of these boxes.
Well, so you keep the tool in the project. And what size, what's the general dimension of that you kind of find works? I mean, I assume that you have a kind of a set where there's, they're all the same size so they can stack or whatever.
Yeah, they're the size of a big binder. They can hold a big binder inside them. It's like for scrapbooking, I guess. Mm-hmm. I'm not actually sure exactly what scrapbooking is, other than occasional mentions.
But I mean, they're the rough size and dimensions of a 3-ring binder.
Yeah, a little bit larger. They can hold one.
Okay,
I think I found them online. Yeah, I see they stack, and they're perfect for like an Arduino and components.
And they're called scrapbook cases?
Yeah, they're slim storage cases, yeah. Slim scrapbooking.
So actually, I see some at Home Depot, unbelievably, called portable scrapbook case, 12 by 12.
Yeah, it's a thing. Accommodates 8.5 by 11 inch paper and folders. So It's 12 by 13 and then 1.6 inches high. So that's the thing.
Iris USA Slim one on Amazon is the one you're looking at.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very similar to what I use. I have smaller ones. I have, that aren't called scrapbooking cases, but I have multiple sizes. I do a lot of, you know, organizing and putting things away, because what happens is I'll have, like, I have one large crate that says M5 on it. It's got, you know, 12 kinds of M5 bolts in it, M5 nuts, the M5, you know, I try to organize everything by the most specific part of its nature, right? The thing you might think of it, right? So there's, you know, something that might have an M5 nut, but is actually for doing a USB thing, might go in US, you know, whatever the most special feature is, I put it together. But like all the M5 inserts are in with the M5s. There's a small bag of M5 taps, 4.5 millimeter drills, 5.1, you know, for making the taps, 5.1 millimeter drills for making, you know, loose fit holes for the M5.
It's like a kit. Like this is like your M5 kit.
Right. And I have an M5 box, an M6 box. There's an M8 box. There's a printing box, et cetera. You know, USB sensors.
Yeah. Your idea, which I had not thought of before, of having a project box where things, where it's not just the materials or the project in its current stage, but the tools, the specific ones, they're all live together in one happy house. That's interesting.
And sometimes that means I need to have multiple sets of tools, especially for inexpensive tools.
Right.
But if it's a specific tool that I needed to work with, like, so for example, the Arduino programmer might go live in there. You know, there's no Arduino programmer, but like my STM32 programmer might go in with the project that's using it for now. And I'll have two or three of them if it's, you know, if it's that important.
Right.
Because I find I spend more time looking for the stuff than I do working on the stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, this is great. Okay, so your fourth pick, in some ways, is kind of well known, but maybe you have something different for us, the McMaster Car Catalog. Tell us about that.
So McMaster Car is one of several large, mechanical parts companies.
It's like a hardware store, the ultimate hardware store.
It's like the hardware store, right? They have everything, and it's like literally the best e-commerce site I've ever seen. Plus education on everything, right? So like there's a plastic section, and they will tell you, you know, this plastic has, you know, good durability but poor machinability, and this one will melt at whatever. And it was actually kind of, there is a physical catalog, but I don't have one. I go online. And it was almost the kind of the inspiration for the Wheelhouse mailing list that I run, which is like about 60% of the time I'll talk to a very active maker, and they've never heard of this. And I'm like, how do you survive? You know, how do you, like I will frequently go, like I will measure a thing. I'm like, okay, I need an M5 bolt, black steel, 13 millimeters long. And I'll go look on there's one, order it. It'll be here, you know, tomorrow or the next day. They're not cheap.
Right.
But...
And the thing that I will interject is that they have everything, and they have a very good description of it, the technical dimensions, you know, the boiling point, whatever it is, all the specs are there, and it's very, very clear.
CAD drawing, there's an STL download, you can get a 3D model of the thing and stuff it into your 3D model and see if it will fit. The problem is that they are often expensive on lots of things that don't need to be. I will still go to Amazon a lot, you know, for bolts or whatever, it's fine. But for like really expensive, you know, things like, for example, the linear rail I bought, like I assume that the McMaster is carrying the good stuff, which is in dollars per millimeter or whatever. And I did not need the good stuff. So I went on Amazon and got something cheap. I probably could have gone on AliExpress and got something even cheaper. But the other thing that I use McMaster for a lot is like, I don't know what and this is the search problem in general, right? I'm so uneducated. I don't know what even the name of the thing that might solve the problem is. So I will just sort of type stuff that sort of related to the problem into the search box. So it's just like, you know, clips, you know, grabby clips, you know, long clips, you know, et cetera. And you will get stuff. It will try. And you will often because you know it's all sort of decent, right? That's the problem with Amazon, is like it's that plus whatever someone keyword stuffed into some random thing, right? If you ask for something sufficiently weird or obscure, you just get like t-shirts.
Right. And this is the, if you can, so all this is online right now and searchable, but for many years and most of his life, the catalog was a physical catalog, and it's a brick of a catalog. It's like thousands of pages thick. I mean, literally thousands of pages. It's about the size of a shoebox or a shoebox.
And I believe you had to buy it.
And you had to buy it. And it's hundreds of dollars, unless you were, a customer that was ordering, daily or weekly. However, these don't go out of date that fast. And so what I recommend is that you find someone with a slightly old catalog who is subscribing basically to it and get one of them, because with this, because of the way it's organized, you can flip through it and you can browse and actually search for what you're looking for a little easier than trying to just put random things in the search box. So the paper one is a little bit better for hunting for something that you don't know what it's called, but you kind of can guess where it might live in the taxonomy of things. And so I use that. I have a paper version that I got from an old version from someone who had a shelf of them. And so seek out someone like that and get a paper version just to browse occasionally.
Maybe we can check eBay and see.
Even on eBay, they're like $50, I think.
Yeah, look at that. Old ones, too.
Yeah, that's old ones for $50.
And then the other thing that's great about them is that they ship quickly. So you'll have what you need, right, fairly rapidly.
One little caveat from that is they won't tell you what the shipping costs are, because they just bill you for the actual shipping costs. So you don't find out until afterwards. But they're honorable about it. But they won't, unlike Amazon, they won't tell you what shipping costs are beforehand.
They're a very secretive company.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they won't let anybody take a look at their warehouse or anything. Like, fans have come to like want to check it out. I think we might have talked to Luke Canlian about it, the guy that works at Applied Inventions. Mm-hmm. And he tried to go there, and they're like, no one looks inside our place.
Okay.
It's got to be an incredible operation. I mean, just the sheer number of SKUs that they have.
Yeah. Because they literally have every variation, I'd say, of a bolt size. If anybody makes it, they probably carry it. If you look at the sizes of bearings or whatever it is, it's just astounding, because every metal and every kind of plated metal and every version of the diameter and the length, and it's amazing.
One of the things I'm hoping to do someday on Wheelhouse is actually do a sort of more thorough search of interesting catalogs.
Yeah.
There are, as amazing as they are, McMaster is sort of very base level stuff. So for example, I needed pulleys to fix something and they didn't have the right thing. And I went to SDPSI. Their McMaster's often a bit, a bit behind on metric things. So that there are other, there are other companies. So it's like Misumi has great stuff too, but their website is still very good, but it's also baffling, right? Like, you have to figure out, they give you a diagram to figure out the part number of the thing that you want, and you have to sort of figure that out by hand.
Yeah, it doesn't work. So let's talk about Wheelhouse a little bit, Josh, in our remaining time.
Yeah, we're so excited about Wheelhouse. But tell people who don't know what it is.
So Wheelhouse is a mailing list at wheelhouse.substack.com. That is basically three or four things that you might add to your repertoire as a maker, right? So it's a new material, it's a new kind of tool, or it's a new kind of technique. And the idea is that there's some reasonable chance that no one's ever heard of this before. or you've never heard of it, rather. So, for example, a couple weeks ago, I saw a YouTube video about that you can cause silicone molds to grow or shrink with the application of mineral oil. So you can actually scale 3D parts, right? So if you wanna make something become larger or become, you know, scaled up or down, and I was just like, you know, holy crap, that seems very useful, right? That's a thing that I can, and then you put that in your pocket for later. And then this is a new kind of screwdriver, and you put that in your pocket for later. Right, so it's basically,
or 3D printing on fabric.
Yeah. I've seen some interest from guest hosts. So other people have come in and done three or four items. So Spencer Wright from The Prepared did one. Which was a lot of fun, and I have another one coming up. So it's every 1 to 2 weeks, or basically as my anxiety builds about having not sent one out lately, I do another one. Right.
And I think what it is it's a little bit of a reflection of the accelerated rate of learning in this sort of maker community, often propelled by YouTube, where people are being very, very innovative in, you know, making new tools, finding new uses for new tools, taking maybe materials that were for professionals and then kind of bringing them to the amateurs. It's kind of all the newsletters and places I've seen, maybe even more than Make Magazine, really into sort of what is the leading edge of a kind of the maker materials, techniques, and Josh is doing a great job. You're doing a great job of kind of bringing that forward.
I mean, and on top of that, there's also, I try to get, you know, cross-pollination from other communities. I mean, I was watching a video about a cosplay costume build, and it was a Kamui, I don't know how to pronounce it, but she glued two pieces of foam together and then just sanded it down with like sand. And I'm like, it never would have occurred to me that you could use sandpaper on foam to clean it up. And it worked fine. And I'm like, okay, well, crap, that's going in my, you know, and then there were like four more in the same video. Like she made a model of herself by wrapping herself in saran wrap, then covering that in duct tape and then cutting it off. And had a like a 3D, like, I'm like, okay, well, you know, that seems useful for cosplay, but you could probably use that for other things, for like awkward shapes or making carbon fiber parts or whatever. I found one in a vintage computer restoration thing, and it was basically they used baking soda and crazy glue, cyanoacrylate glue. And basically, you put a little bit of glue on, and then you put the powder on, and it solidifies to rock hard instantly. And then you can, but it's not so tough that you can't just file it down. So they basically restored like a Commodore 64 part, and painted it. And I'm like, crap, that seems useful.
Yeah, that's really cool. I've used that too.
Yeah, or even the I was just thinking of the restoration guys and the tricks of using hydrogen peroxide to bleach back the original colors. It's just, So there's a whole bunch of innovation and really fantastic inventiveness happening in this world. And Wheelhouse is a newsletter trying to gather some of that information, and you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Where, besides Wheelhouse, is that the place people can follow you best? You are on Twitter too, right?
I'm Joshu, Joshu on Twitter. But I mostly post about plotter drawings and stupid humor. nothing incredibly revelatory. I do talk about the Wheelhouse stuff there too.
Cool. Well, Joshua, this has been great chatting with you and catching up with you. We didn't even get a chance to talk about car racing, but we'll have you on again, and we will have you
sounds
tell
great
about that. Thanks so much.
We'll do that one at the racetrack.
Oh, right. Cool. Okay.
Hey everybody, it's Mark from the Cool Tools Podcast. I want to thank you for being a listener to Cool Tools. And I also would like to let you know about our Patreon page. If you would like to support the Cool Tools show, as well as our video channel, the website, and all the newsletters that we do, you can go to patreon.com/cooltools. That's just one word, Cool Tools, and pledge any amount you want. You could even pledge $1 a month. Every little bit helps. We have editors, we pay for transcribing costs, we pay our reviewers. Every bit of money that you contribute goes towards supporting the show. I'd like to give a shout out to our supporters of the Cool Tools Podcast. This week, I'd like to thank the following Patreon supporters: Bill Schuler, Bob Kay, Brian Pelly, Carl D. Patterson, Chad Cosby, Chris Wieland, Chris Weirstook, Craig Tooker, Dan O'Brien, Dean Putney, Danelle Cunningham, Evan Barker, Graham Medlin, Hans Riesbeck, Helen Hegedus, Jerry Kearns, Jim Lesko, Jim Spofford, John Pollock, John Burdenbaugh, Keith O., Ken Altman, Les Howard, Lauren Bast, Mock Nerd, Malton Make, Mark Goebel, Matt Gromes, Michael Douglas, Michael Jones, and Michael Pecorini. Thanks to all of you for supporting the Cool Tools Show. We really appreciate it.